Welcome to NACE Clinical Highlights. I am Dr. Genevieve Neal Perry, and I am Narabade Ross Distinguished Professor, as well as the chair for the Department of OBGYN at UNC in Chapel Hill. Today's podcast is Candid Conversations About Menopause Treatment Barriers. And I'm pleased to introduce a panel of people who will help us look at the barriers from different vantage points. Our first panelist discussing barriers from a patient's perspective is Dr. Gwen Bernacki.
Thank you, Dr. Neal Perry. I'm a longtime patient of Dr. Neal Perry's. I have 10-year-old twins following multiple cycles of IVF, and I'm also a clinician, a cardiologist.
Thank you. I'm so happy to have you here. Next, I'd like to introduce Dr. Sherman, and he will provide a primary care vantage point.
Thanks, Genevieve. I'm Dr. Greg Sherman. I'm a family physician in South Florida, and I'm also the chief medical officer for NACE.
All right. Thank you, Greg, for being here. And last but not least, is Dr. Nanette Santoro, who will be helping us understand the barriers from the perspective or vantage point of an OBGYN.
Hi, I'm Nanette Santoro. I'm professor and E. Stuart Taylor Chair of OB-GYN at the University of Colorado, and I've been doing research in clinical care in menopause for about 35 years.
So glad that you could join us, Nanette, and to be able to provide your perspective. So, you know, we're talking about menopause, and you may have the question, why? Well, an estimated 6,000 women daily will enter menopause, and an estimated 2 million women annually within the United States enter menopause. With the average age of about 81, that means that the average person will spend about a third of their lives in the menopause. Importantly, 70% of women will encounter symptoms that are associated with the menopause, particularly hot flashes, sleep disruption, cognitive decline, also what we know as brain fog. And for people with moderate to severe menopausal symptoms, we also know that there are increased risks for depression, anxiety, heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, and loss of wages secondary to reduced productivity and an overall reduced quality of life. So this is an important topic, and it impacts a large number of people. So what I'd like to do is to start with Gwen. And I'd love to hear, Gwen, you talk about your perspective as a patient. And you being a physician really just brings to point that it doesn't matter what your background is, the experience can be challenging and it can be unique from the perspective of your own experience. And so we'd like to hear from you what those challenges are and share with us how you've navigated some of them.
Thanks so much for the invitation. This is really an honor to be here and be able to discuss my experience as a patient going through menopause. My experience or continue experiencing night sweats, the immediately change your sheets type of night sweats. Following my pregnancy, I was very pleased when I found out that that did not occur. nonetheless, since then, I have begun to experience a variety of menopausal symptoms that at many times have been difficult for me to recognize. Sometimes I have attributed them to anxiety, fatigue, overwork, sleep deprivation, basically just having kids. but I think that that the other piece of it that's important to highlight is, at least in my mind, after having completed IVF and recognizing that there are many, many women who are also aging along with me, that this is really a natural process and maybe not something that I should be seeking treatment for. And I have been very lucky that I've had Dr. Neal Perry, who's helped me walk this path as a trusted resource. And she has made the time for me and addressed my many, many questions about symptoms, signs of menopause, and what I can do about it. For me, I wasn't very excited about the prospect of going back on hormones. And I had a lot of questions, particularly with my clinical background and a lot of reservations, again, because I thought this was, you know, a natural process. But I think that having a greater awareness about menopause is helpful. At least it was for me. And I've been very fortunate, like I've said, to benefit from Dr. Neil Perry's expertise, and happy to share, you know, my experience today with others, not just in terms of recognizing symptoms, but also that I've gone ahead and really sought out treatments for this.
Thanks a lot, Gwen. You really touched on several things that are important. I bet a lot of our audience members who are in the menopause or making that transition might actually, it may resonate. You talked about stigma, right? That menopause is a natural process, yet there is a stigma that can be associated with it. Dr. Santoro, what are your thoughts? What can you share with us about that idea that menopause might be stigmatized?
Lots. Thank you, Gwen, for bringing this up and getting us into it. But, you know, menopause as a topic has baggage. In many ways, it's a narrative of loss. While some women will welcome the end of menstrual periods and no further need for birth control, there's a lot in the media that we see and a lot in our society that make menopause a negative association for us. Women lose fertility. They lose estrogen. We use those words all the time. And in fact, I often will tell my patients, you know, you haven't completely lost estrogen. It didn't just fly away in the nighttime. You know, there's still a little bit of it circulating in your body. You've just downsized pretty significantly. And that needs some attention for some people. But changing that narrative of loss, I think, is one barrier. There's also a fear of treatment because there's everything has side effects, and Dr. Google is very pervasive. And if you want to look up any drug at all, there's always some grumpy person who's had a bad side effect who will really freely tell you about that online. Questioning the need for treatment, and this touches on a little bit of what Gwen said, you know, is this that like natural childbirth? You know, everyone felt sort of like you were a wimp if you needed an epidural. And let me tell you, I very much appreciated mine during labor. But at menopause, if you take treatment, you know, shouldn't you just be toughing it out? That's some of the sentiment that gets in the way for my patients. And in many ways, life gets in the way. It makes it a little difficult to tell what your symptoms are. Is this just because one is getting older? Is it because you have teenage children in the house and life is hectic? Is it because you have aging parents? Is this why you're having some of the symptoms you're having? So those things all can cause some barriers.
Thank you, Nanette. Again, you really have hit the nail on the head. You know, there is the stigma, the perceived loss, and when in fact it should be a time to celebrate. It's the new phase in life, and it means in many ways that you actually have been able to live some time, that you've made it to this point. And I really think that your comments about all of the other distractors that often happen at that period in one's life and how it may confuse things is also very relevant. Greg, from your perspective as a primary care provider, what are some of the barriers to treating people who present to you with hot flashes or vasomotor symptoms?
Great. Thanks, Genevieve. And as I was thinking about this, many of the thoughts that have just come out from Gwen and Nanette really reflect the barriers that I think we face in primary care. I tried to put it together in my mind in three buckets, let's say, complexity, time, and fear. And the complexity is what really was alluded to, Gwen and Nanette, the complexity of, are my symptoms related to menopause? So we in primary care see an increasingly complex group of patients that have multiple comorbid diseases, and they see us on a regular basis. So when a woman walks in with these kinds of symptoms, and she may not be sure it's menopause, we may not be sure either, and it requires a lot of diligence working through a potential diagnostic algorithm to get to the right diagnosis and recognize that it may not be menopause, but ultimately it may be, and that takes time to reassure our patients that we know what's going on with them. So that's a time and a barrier for the patient as well as us to get to the right place. The second issue is time. As I mentioned, our multiple comorbid complex patients, they walk in to see us on a regular basis and we're there to manage their diabetes, their hypertension, their COPD, some anxiety or depression, and then be presented with symptoms that turn out to be menopause. And then we have to discuss those treatment options with them. That's not a two-minute discussion. That requires time and attention to really do justice to it. And even if we don't have the time to do it, then we might say, well, come back on another visit and we'll have that discussion. Well, you may have lost that opportunity at that moment to have the discussion with your patient. They may not be able to get another visit in a convenient time with you, or if I refer them to my GYN colleagues, there may be a very long way to get into those offices as well. So there's a missed or delayed opportunity to meet those patients' need at that time. And the last point that I thought was a challenge for us in primary care is we're still faced with fear of hormonal therapy. Hormones may be a very appropriate treatment for many women experiencing menopausal symptoms, but for many, this fear of hormonal therapies is a pervasive one. And it's important for us to understand what their fear is, why they believe that, and if we indeed think it's an appropriate therapy for them, then we need to spend the time counseling the patient. Or if after discussion with them and recognizing their multiple comorbidities, their fears may be, they may not need hormonal therapy because they're not appropriate because of their comorbidities. These are not simple discussions. And they take a lot of time, and that's important for us to be able to work through. So therefore, those are barriers for us in primary care.
Thanks, Greg. And you know, you talk about time, and time is so important for developing those relationships of trust. And certainly if you're spending, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, it's hard to really develop that trust and that patients know that you hear them, you understand what their concerns are, and that you're able to really provide that feedback and that intervention that's going to really provide them the relief they need. A couple of things that I know that, before we started, we've had conversations also about just access to medications. The access to medications is not universal. So some pharmacies carry treatments, others don't. Cost could also be a challenge if the insurance doesn't cover the intervention that you're recommending. And, the other thing in terms of access is access to providers who feel comfortable actually writing prescriptions for hormonal therapy or who understand what the non-hormonal options are. So it's coming from multiple directions, and it's certainly a challenge for patients who are making that transition and trying to figure out what's the best approach and what's the next best step. Nanette, some people say that this is a GYN issue. And from an OBGYN's perspective, what makes menopause hard to address?
We have a few problems in our field being able to currently address menopausal issues. There is a gap, as has been mentioned, in expertise. And in essence, we've lost almost a whole generation of physicians in OB-GYN who are comfortable giving things like hormone therapy or even learning enough about other therapies that are effective for menopausal symptoms. Menopause has been squeezed into a smaller and smaller part of the resident curriculum. And there was a recent report that a minority of doctors feel that they've gotten an adequate amount of education in menopause management, which is sad when you're talking about an issue that has 100% incidence in half of the population. So OB-GYN-wise, we remain a little bit challenged with that barrier. And I think that makes it hard for clinicians to recognize symptoms. Classical teaching was that you treated menopause after a woman's final menstrual period, yet we've learned a lot about symptoms, and they most often appear and peak even before menstrual periods have stopped. So clinician recognition of what's going on is sometimes impaired. And quite often my patients will come in, with their Apple Watch or their menstrual tracker, telling me what their menstrual cycles were. And because I do research in this area, I understand it. But if they hit a clinician who does not know any of this, they may be met with someone who's just completely confused as to what's going on. The second barrier, and that's also been alluded to, is the goop, disinformation and misinformation. The disinformation highway seems to predominate sometimes, and patients do come in with lots and lots of non-evidence-based treatments. So that requires time and effort in redirecting patients to treatments that are FDA approved and pointing out, you know, the potential harms or lack of efficacy of a lot of things that are out there, but very aggressively advertised. Patients don't understand fully that many of these remedies are considered dietary supplements and they have zero regulation by the FDA. So distinguishing what's government approved from what is just pretty much random and unregulated is tough. And finally, you know, for OB-GYNs as well, getting patients' medication has become more difficult than ever because there's narrow networks with physicians. There's narrow pharmacy options for patients. We have a wonderful array of medications to treat patients with menopausal symptoms. But if you can't get past the pre-authorization process, they're not going to get the medication.
Thank you, Dr. Santoro, for those really important comments. And, you know, the information highway is immense. And there is just so much disinformation on the internet that it really does make patients, it makes it very hard for patients to really figure out which way to go. And having access to providers who understand what the symptoms are can help patients recognize those symptoms and then also help them actually gain access to treatments are really in a place where we need to bridge some gaps. Dr. Bernacki, we talked about access to providers. We talked about access to medications. We talked about recognizing symptoms. Has this affected you or anyone that you know?
For sure. I think I've been affected by all of those things. I think access is a real issue. I think finding the time and means to speak with an expert like yourself is challenging in the midst of a busy schedule. But even beyond that, moving towards hormonal therapies, being at a pharmacy that understands the prescribed medications and not having to fill those medicines at multiple pharmacies with different fill dates, that's, you know, further adds to challenges. And certainly the cost of the medications, I think, is significant relative to other medicines. I think all of these things add to the stigma. And I think recognizing these today is very important as a patient. I really think the time is now.
Yeah. No, thank you, Dr. Bernacki, for that. You know, both you and Dr. Santoro, you know, you brought up the issue of FDA approved, and that's a really important one, and that it's important for both our providers and our patients to understand which treatments that are available actually have been shown to make a difference, because otherwise patients become very frustrated. And again, that has an impact on trust. Greg, Dr. Santoro brought up the GOOP or disinformation, misinformation kind of act that's out there around menopausal care. From your perspective as a primary care provider, have you seen any remnants of this? Has this had an impact on your practice?
It certainly has. And it's certainly relevant in the menopause space, but it really goes across everything we face in practice. And I think the counter to that was already discussed a little bit, but you alluded to it, Genevieve, is that relationship you develop. It's hard to develop rapport in 2 minutes, but hopefully we as providers have longer relationships with our patients, and they really see us as a trusted, credible resource. And that really is the way that we are able to counter the flurry of disinformation that's available out on the internet or wherever they may be getting that information. that we take the time, recognize where they're getting their information, not dismiss that wholesale, but present alternative FDA-approved, well-researched information that we make our decisions with, and then make those decisions with our patient, with our patients using shared decision-making so that they understand the information they've been given. And I think that's the best way to counteract that.
Yeah, that's great. Again, you brought up the concept of shared decision-making, which is really important. And an important piece of that is actually listening to what your patient says. So that's at the top of the pyramid as we think about this, and then building that trust. You know, when we talk about barriers to access with the introduction of telemedicine, hopefully some of these barriers, particularly to experts, is decreasing, given the ability to actually have interactions with a specialist using telemedicine. You know, we should definitely make sure that we can arm our physicians as well as our patients with information about coupons to help our patients have access to more affordable medication. This really only scratches the surface from the perspective of menopause. As Nanette said, you know, half of our population will or has undergone the menopausal transition and the menopause. But we have to start somewhere. And I want to say thank you to all of our panelists for providing their really thoughtful comments, as well as to Gwen for sharing her experiences. This podcast is one of several activities covering the management of menopause and the menopausal vasomotor symptoms. If you can, please join us for a live podcast recording during the April 20th Emerging Challenges and Clinical Updates in Primary Care. That podcast is due to be released in May. And a June podcast will respond to the top five questions on this topic submitted by learners like you. Please like us on Facebook at MACME to be a part of our online social media community and get access to other content and programs we share. Finally, a big thank you to you, our audience, for joining us for this podcast. Our hope is that the perspectives discussed today can help you and all of us better understand the very critical topic in women's health, menopause. We look forward to having you join us for the upcoming podcast in the future. Thank you and have a great day.